My name is Sojourner. At least, that's the name I am most known by. The name I was given at birth was Isabella, but my parents called me Belle. The last name, which you all may know, Truth, was the surname that I also gave myself later in life. To me, Isabella, or Belle, was always someone else's. That name was never mine. Growing up as a slave in the 19th century, nothing was ever really mine. With my freedom later in life, and a life's new mission, I gave myself the name Sojourner, or Traveler. And because my mission was spreading the word of God and His truths, I gave myself the last name Truth. Sojourner Truth. Sounded much better than Dumont's Bell or Hardingberg's Bell. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's go back a bit. I was born in 1797. I don't know exactly when, because I was a child of two slaves, meaning I would be a slave, meaning not much about me mattered besides how much work I could do to benefit my master. I had as many as 11 siblings, but some of them I never met. They either died or were sold to other masters. My parents could not do anything to stop any of this from happening because we were not seen as human. We were viewed as property and treated as such. People oftentimes associate slavery with southern states. Unfortunately, slavery was legal and common in northern states as well at that time. I was actually born and grew up not far from here. My journey of life began in Swartekill, New York. Now it is a hamlet known as Rifton. After my first owners died, I was sold to the Neelys along with a flock of sheep to make the deal more worthwhile. Mr. John Neely paid $100 for me and that flock of sheep. I was only 9 years old. The Neelys lived in Kingston, not far from Swartekill. I was the only slave they owned, and I did mostly housework and cooking. From there, I was sold to Martin Shriver, where I stayed for about 18 months. I helped unload fishing boats, worked in the cornfields, and worked in my owner's tavern. They treated me well, kept me clothed, and were kind. But when a man named John Dumont saw how strong I was, he offered to buy me for $300. That's $200 more than what the Shrivers originally paid for me. Well, the Shrivers couldn't pass that up, so I soon became Mr. Dumont's Belle and went to live and work for him in New Paltz. During my time with the Dumonts, I met another slave named Robert. He belonged to a Mr. Caitlin. We met at a large feast celebrating Pinkster or Pentecost. Although we fell in love, we could not marry. You see, if we were to marry and have children, those children would belong to the Dumonts and not the Caitlins. So Mr. Caitlin had Robert marry one of his own slaves so that their children would belong to him. One of Mr. Dumont's other slaves, Thomas, was chosen to be my husband. Although it was an arranged marriage, Thomas and I grew quite fond of each other, and we had 5 children together. Some good news came to New York in 1817. A law was passed stating that slaves born before July 4th, 1799, had to be freed by 1827. Our children would also eventually be freed under this law. My sons would be free by age 28, and my daughters at age 25. Mr. Dumont even said that he would free us sooner. When he failed to hold up his end of the deal, however, in 1826, a year before we legally had to be freed, I took my baby Sophia and headed out on my own. I stayed with a white family, the Van Wagners. They were abolitionists. They let me work for them to earn my stay, but they did not own me. I could leave whenever I wanted. Even though I had escaped and was free, life was as hard as ever. I was never taught how to read or write, and I had no formal education. I had little to no rights, and most people at that time did not see me as a human. But I could not give up. I wanted to make a better life, not just for myself, but for my children and my children's children. You could only imagine my horror when I found out that my 5-year-old son, Peter, was sold to slave owners in Alabama. You see, this was actually illegal. New York was a free state, and Alabama was a slave state. A slave from a free state could not be sold to someone in a slave state. I was heartbroken, but I was also angry. Mr. Dumont claimed he knew nothing about it, and Mrs. Dumont actually laughed at me for making such a fuss over the matter. I told her, "I'll have my child again." Why, I felt so tall within. I felt as if the power of a nation was with me. The Van Wagners helped me. They advised me to file a suit against Solomon Gredney, the brother of the man who had originally bought my son from Mr. Dumont. It was unheard of at the time, but I did it. I, a former slave, took a white man to court. It all happened right here at the Ulster County Courthouse. I was the first black woman to sue a white man. And the greatest part? I won! A few months after that victory, my son Peter was back with me in Kingston. I heard that last spring, documents from that court case were rediscovered and shared with the public, giving the people of your time an even greater glimpse into one of the proudest moments of my life. Shortly after that, Peter and I headed to New York City. My daughters thought it was a good idea and agreed to take care of Sophia for me. It was there that I began speaking at churches. I kept looking for more good to do. I asked God what I should do. One day, while deep in prayer, God told me to go east. On June 1st, 1843, I did just that. I headed to Connecticut on a ferry. That was when I started using the name Sojourner Truth. I devoted my life to spreading the word of God. I was 46 at that point. Along my journey of truth, I learned that not all white people were seen as equals. Women were also a suppressed group. They could not be leaders, pass laws, vote, or own property. From that point on, I started speaking not only on the rights of people of color, but also for the rights of women. I started gaining recognition. I published a book and sold it at places I spoke. Although not everyone at every stop was happy or agreed with what I said, I pressed on. I was determined to make a difference. In 1857, I moved to a small community called Harmonia in Michigan. It was a place where blacks and whites lived together and everyone was treated equally. My daughters lived nearby, and that meant that I got to spend a lot of time with my grandsons, James and Sammy. During the Civil War, my grandson James signed up with the Northern Army. I couldn't have been more proud of him. I never stopped fighting in my own battles during the Civil War. I continued to give my talks about rights for all and about what could be done to help former slaves start a life of their own. I even got the attention of President Abraham Lincoln. I had the honor of meeting him in Washington, D.C. in 1864. He had heard of me and was as happy to meet me as I was to meet him. Although I was getting older and more tired, I could not slow down. There was always more to do. I never stopped fighting for the rights of former slaves and for women. Progress was being made, but we had to keep moving forward and keep doing more. By the time I died, on November 26, 1883, at the age of 86, I had seen and done so much and lived so many different lives. I had been beaten, sold, and freed. I knew the deepest heartache and the greatest joys. You have come a long way since my time, but there is always more to do. Please, do me a favor. And don't ever stop. Don't give up on what you believe in and what's right. Keep fighting for more. And always seek the truth.